Hello and welcome to this podcast from the International Accounting Standards Board. My name is Robert Bruce and I am a financial journalist. With me today to discuss the joint board meeting held on the 1st and 2nd of March 2011 are board member Steve Cooper and Alan Teixeira, Director of Technical Activities at the IASB. Alan, let's start with you. What was discussed and what was decided about revenue recognition?
Thanks, Robert. The only item we really discussed for revenue recognition was onerous contracts. And basically, they discussed that previously in February, and essentially what the boards have decided is that the onerous test should apply to all contracts, including those that are intentionally priced to a sort of loss of expectation of profits coming on subsequent contracts. And the most important part of the decision is that if you've got one contract and we separate that into separate performance obligations, and it might be that, you know, if you look at those independently, that one of them ends up showing a loss, but you're going to make profits on the other part of it. Mm-hmm. When you do the onerous test, you actually look at the contract as a whole. Otherwise, what you end up doing is having an expense up front in anticipation of the profits later on. But the thing is, you wouldn't have entered into those two separate components independently. They are part of the one contract. So what we call it is the unit of account itself is the contract as a whole. And that's a little bit different from the situation where perhaps you deliberately price something to establish a relationship with a customer in the hope that you'll get further sales downstream. Now, when it's an independent contract, and if you're running at a loss on that contract, the onerous test will apply and you'll have to recognise those losses up front. So I think that's a good, strong support for that decision from both boards.
Good. In that case, let's move across to insurance. Steve, what happened with insurance?
Well, Robert, we had quite a number of sessions on insurance. Some of those we made some tentative decisions. Some we asked the staff to do some additional work, and some were more for an educational purposes. But if I just go through some of the main areas that we covered. Firstly, the first one is the discount rate and the whole issue of whether the discount rate should be locked in. Some comment letters identified this as a way of dealing with some of the volatility issues that were identified with the ED. And in the ED, we had always a current discount rate, that an insurance contract should be measured based upon forecast cash flows and the current discount rate to convert those to a present value. And some argued that obviously this creates a variation in the measurement, and that using a locked-in discount rate, which is a kind of more of an amortized cost notion, obviously the cash flows would be current, but the discount rate locked in is reflects kind of amortized cost, that would be a way of dealing with the volatility. So we had this in many of the comment letters. It's been raised in many of our outreach activities. So the board and staff have given this particular issue a lot of thought, and it's, I think, an important part of the project. We decided in the end that we wouldn't lock in the discount rate, that we would confirm the decision in the ED and we would use the current rate. We believe that this is a more representative measure of the liability. Many, many others had supported this through the comment letter process. And also, we felt that it wasn't appropriate to deal with the volatility issue this way, that there are other means that we can do, and partly we've done that through the discount rate decision last month, and there'll be other things that we will look at, particularly in terms of presentation. So we weren't persuaded by the arguments and confirmed what we had in the ED. But then went on to discounting of non-life contracts and whether we should always discount rather than which rate. And we decided that we would require discounting in all cases, except where the impact would not be material. And this is where we asked the staff to go away and look at additional guidance that might be appropriate in that situation. We talked about scope. The ED excluded some fixed fee service contracts that might meet the definition of insurance, but the ED proposed to exclude them from the scope. That's because essentially they were more like service and better accounted for under the revenue recognition standard. So we reconfirmed that, but we will consider in the future how best to identify those contracts, because there's always a tension about exactly under what circumstances you would exclude and how we define primary purpose being the provision of services, which is the phrase that we use. We also talked about financial guarantee contracts. Financial guarantee contracts, under the ED, it was proposed, would be included in the insurance standard. They do meet the definition of insurance. We had a lot of feedback on this, and particularly from financial institutions that aren't insurance companies but which do issue contracts, so banking institutions. At the moment, under IFRS, they are permitted to account for them in accordance with financial instrument standards if they hadn't previously asserted that they regarded it as an insurance contract. So there was some flexibility. Yeah. And what we've decided to do is to go back to that and keep the flexibility. I think we were persuaded that it wasn't appropriate to force those entities to change, to use the insurance standard for just for things which are economically quite similar to many of their other credit products, which are accounted for under the financial instrument standard. We had an educational session, well, it wasn't an educational session, but we had a report from the staff about the field testing that has been done. We've had a number of companies working very closely with us to test some of the proposals in the ED, and the staff gave us a preliminary report on that. There'll be more detailed reports coming later, and what we have learned from the field test work will be incorporated into the board papers. Obviously, we have some confidentiality issues there from the participants, so we won't be able to reveal the detail of those results, but it will be fed into the board papers as appropriate. We talked about uncertainty, risk and uncertainty. It was more of an educational session about how risk and uncertainty is reflected within the model. We will come back to the risk adjustment in the next few weeks. I think, Alan, next month in the board meeting, we're doing extensive sessions on risk adjustments.
Yeah, it's only 2 weeks away as well with the sessions. We've got 3 days, I think, in the 14th of March, joint meetings with the FASB, and then we continue those when we all travel across to Norwalk the week later.
Okay, and that includes educational sessions from outside parties as well?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think there's Monday or Tuesday lunchtime, thereabouts.
And then finally, acquisition costs. Now, this is the area where actually the two boards disagreed, and we've ended up with a slightly different tentative decision. We'll try and resolve those disagreements later on. But the FASB decided, in terms of acquisition costs, that you would only include in the definition of acquisition costs costs related to successful acquisition costs, acquisition efforts, so only those costs related to the contracts which you actually successfully obtain. And it should be limited to the direct costs related to those. The ISB took a slightly different view and decided that because the unit of account that we're dealing with in the insurance standard is the portfolio, that we would look at all the costs related to the acquisition of that portfolio. So obviously some of those costs may relate to contracts that weren't obtained and others to contracts that are, but we would say, well, the portfolio has been acquired and therefore we will look at the costs at the portfolio level rather than try and differentiate them at the individual contract level. We also asked staff to look further at exactly what we mean, what type of cost we should capitalise. We had a slight sort of long discussion about direct versus directly attributable to, and I think we had difficulty articulating exactly what the different possibilities were. So what the staff are going to do is to draft some application guidance on exactly what that means, and then the boards will consider that next time. But as I say, the difference of view about which costs to include, which acquisition costs to include in the contract cash flows within the measurement model, that's something that we'll return to at the end of our deliberation process and see if we can achieve convergence.
Excellent. In that case, there was more news on leasing. Alan,
yes,
what happened there?
Not a great deal in terms of... most of this was actually looking at some of the key issues about confirming that we're going to continue to use a right-of-use model for lessee accounting, and also the scope. And it's fundamental that we go have a look and see what the people said in the comment letters. And there was support for us to do that in terms of the right-of-use. So both boards also unanimous agreed that we should continue to develop the proposals on a right-of-use, which essentially, when you're leasing an asset, it gives you the right to use that asset for the period of the lease. So that's been done, and we will continue from there. The other issue was scope, in that at the moment, for example, we exclude from the scope of our current lease requirements things like but assets like forestry, things like that, and some intangibles. And the question we have is whether or not to continue with that scope exclusion. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing is we're going to retain the existing scope exclusions that we have, so there's nothing changed there. The FASB is going to do a little bit more work. They're a little bit worried about one of their existing requirements for internal use software and an aspect of inventory that they have. But essentially, I think we've got enough for us to go forward with this.
Excellent. So on to financial statement presentation. Steve?
Well, FSP is not an active project really at the moment for the board. We obviously have many, many years dealing with this and made a lot of progress. But because of the focus on the four large projects at the moment, we're not really spending much board time on this. Having said that, things have been going on in the background. The staff have been doing a whole lot of field work, talking to constituents. I know they've been participating in a number of roundtables, discussion forums organised by EFRAG. So a lot of information was gathered based upon the staff draft of a possible ED that we produced last year. The staff draft was posted on the website, and we used it as the basis for discussion with the constituents. We weren't confident enough to issue it as an ED at the time. So the staff have done that. They came back with a whole load of proposals as to how we might develop the project going forwards. The board listened to that, asked some questions, but we're not going to take it forward at this stage. Of course, financial statement presentation is part of our overall consultation on the future agenda. We will be consulting it in due course on that, not just potential new projects, but also consulting on those projects which are ongoing, which we haven't got to a stage of developing a final standard. So we'll consult an FSP. So really it was a report back to draw some closure on this part of the project. We thank the staff, we thank very much the participants that have helped us in the field testing, in all the meetings that we've had, the contribution from EFRAG and from other national standard setters around the world. So I think we're in a good place to restart this in the future. Many people have suggested changes to the scope, things like adding in other comprehensive income. These will all be considered as part of our decisions about the future agenda.
That's right.
Thank you. In that case, on to the final main topic, Alan, effective dates.
Yeah, we had a separate consultation because we've got a reasonably large number of major projects coming in at the same time. We thought it was appropriate to ask about effective dates and transition for revenue, leases, insurance, for example. You know, should we stagger them over a period, or should we bring in what they call a big bang so they all come in at the same time? How much time do people need? You know, are they big enough that they need system changes? We get a lot of feedback from the individual projects as well, but we wanted to have a look and see what if there were any synergies or economies of scale by doing everything at once. And you know, what about early adoption? Should we allow it? Should we prevent it? A lot of users are concerned if we allow early adoption, it reduces comparability, particularly if we have a long lead time. But then some jurisdictions are just adopting IFRSs. Surely you don't want to say you can't adopt that one early and force them to have two major changes in a short term. Now, we actually got very good response to this, and I think a lot of people were pleased that we took the initiative of separating this aspect out from the parts of the project and looking holistically. It's clear that people do want time. There's probably a bigger push for what we call the big bang from the ISB side. I think there's reasonably strong support for at least allowing early adoption. Again, we think we need to do a bit more work from the user community to look at that as well. Transition is going to be important as well, because I think on the ISB side, the people are used to retrospective application where you go back and adjust from the beginning. But there was slightly less support from that, perhaps from the US side. So the question is whether we allow prospective or whether we should mandate retrospective adjustment. The other thing too is also disclosure in the period leading up to the change, in that people want to know how the financial is going to be reshaped as we implement the new changes. And so we probably have a little bit of work to do with that. And I think it's fair to say that the users would like more information, and some of the preparers are saying that, you know, particularly if you have a long lead time, it can be quite onerous, and so we have to think about that. We did consider a proposal as to whether or not we should at least give the markets a bit of certainty about at least the earliest adoption date, perhaps for some of our major projects like revenue leases and insurance. Now, both boards do want to give assurance, and they want to make sure that people know that they will have plenty of time to get ready for this. It's lead time's going to be, typically for us, it's been 12 to 18 months, and I think it's fair to say it's likely to be longer than that again. But the boards weren't quite ready to lock themselves into a date for that. They want the staff to have a look, particularly at transition, and do so very quickly, so within the next month or so we can actually give a lot more certainty about the likely dates.
Good. So it's all about attempting, within reason, to make life easier.
Absolutely. The thing is, we're not going to produce these new requirements on 30th June and make them 1 July 2011 application.
Good. And what else? That's the main topics covered. What else should people be looking out for?
Interpretations Committee meets next week on Thursday and Friday, and then our board is meeting in London on the following week. That's beginning the 14th. There'll be joint sessions with the FASB. Steve said we've got a couple of visiting slots where we have some people presenting to our boards on sessions on insurance. The main topics essentially will be the same ones we've been looking at: revenue, leases, and insurance. We have a public session with EFRAG on Friday of that week, and then the following Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll be in Norwalk in the US, this time joining the FASB in their headquarters. And then that's followed on the Thursday after that with an insurance working group here in London. So it's quite a busy time, particularly for insurance.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time, Steve. Thank you, Alan. And finally, the traditional disclaimer: the views expressed in this podcast are those of the participants and are not necessarily the official views of the IASB, which can be found on the IASB website. Thank you. Goodbye.